Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
Good evening again. It is Tuesday, and you're on Nemenha Radio. Now, Chief Wailamutkin and I have had a lot of discussions here, and we're just going to keep on discussing the things that are most important to our seminars and workshops that we engage in here.
And especially what pops up in practice.
Yeah. And you know what is really interesting about this is the reason we focus on this on our radio program so far, and that's what we've kind of obsessed on, is because that is what pops up. That is what we see so often. And it's amazing when you get into an actual ministerial practice how often you see the same thing. Now, everybody's different. There's no cookie-cutter people out there, and we say this over and over again, and that's one of the reasons that we're so excited about sponsoring and training apothecaries with competence around the country so that we can really address the individuality of every single sufferer in a way that is not being done. That's exciting to us. But there again, in practice, in the office, in our ministries, we run into over and over and over again many of the same issues in different people. And I have to say, probably 70-80% of people present a lot of the same things. And so what we are focusing on for a while, at least until we get all the way through it, until we think we've covered the issues, are three things that we think that are so important for people to rest at home. Now, they can come into our ministry, to the practice, and receive assistance. But ideally, don't we want them to go home and be able to handle this at home? Isn't that what self-reliant healing actually is?
Should be.
Should be, yes.
Yeah.
So we've talked, and you'll probably notice some repeats. We've talked about maintaining the body terrain. We've talked about probiotics. We've talked about alkalizing a little bit. We talk about the immune system a lot, and we will quite a lot. Tonight, we're going to talk more about the things that actually that stress, the physical issues that stress cause, and you know how it shuts physical systems and health completely down, and what we can do about that. Now, first of all, I want to premise that with the whole concept or the whole discussion of stress has taken a kind of an idiotic turn in our profession, hasn't it?
How diplomatic.
Well, not very diplomatic. No, tonight, not really. The idea, ever since the profession and industry of psychology decided that stress was an emotional concern, ever since it was tied to emotional responses, for some reason, the whole direction in overcoming the effects of stress have gone really overboard. I mean, they've gone AWOL. So what I want to talk about tonight, well, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I do, yeah.
You know what I mean by that. When stress is tied to perception, when stress is tied to our reaction to a stressor, he says with the air quotes, what then happens is, you know, it boils down to perception in, you know, what to do about it. And the question is really what to do about it. Here's the thing. We now know that because of the peculiar nature of the thalamus and hypothalamus, the brain, that the signals, the messages that go to the pituitary, which begin a cascade of hormones, happens just under the speed of light. I say this all the time. I'm like a broken record in my seminars. Just under the speed of light. How fast can you react to a stressor? Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to hit you hard on the side of the head. Okay, ready? I'm not really going to hit you on the side of the head, but how fast can you respond to that? Now, you may be able to block the blow, but can you block the stress?
No.
You can't.
No.
Now, we've both been a little bit involved in martial arts, not, you know, seriously, but, you know.
You almost have your black belt.
I almost. Yeah. I'm 56 years old, and I'm almost a black belt, and so, you know, if you were to try and strike me in the side of the head, I could probably block the blow and redirect you the flow of your energy. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to tell you the stress does not go away.
No, no. Martial arts teaches you to use some of those responses as an advantage in the next move.
Oh, absolutely. You want to move the energy in the way you want it to go. But there is a reason, say, for example, in a tournament in Taekwondo, at least, you know, in tournaments of the nature that you and I would, you know, participate in.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason that sparring matches are held to 3 minutes. And that reason is you don't make it. I mean, if you make it for longer than 3 minutes, you're in dang good shape. And I've watched guys who are in dang good shape not make it. The reason they lost the match was because they couldn't make it to the 3 minute bell. That's because the fight or flight response assists us in the fight or the flight.
Mm-hmm.
It assists us in blocking that blow or avoiding that kick, but it doesn't shut down the hormone cascade that happens. So let's talk about that just a little bit. That hormone cascade is so important. Last week I gave an example of Marge, who had a heart attack. You remember the example I gave?
Yeah.
The aneurysm explosion, that aortal artery system going, the splenic artery. One of the reasons that, and I use it as an example of how the body lies. The body never lies to you, right? Your muscle testers will always tell you this. Your body never, ever lies. Well, that's not true. Your body lies to you all the time. In order to increase or to keep the heart rate and the blood pressure up and the blood flow up to other organs, the body tricked, or the systems of the body, automatic systems, the body tricked the rest of the systems into believing there wasn't a wide open artery gushing blood into the chest cavity and into the abdominal cavity. So, you know, that is an example of an absolute lie. Any other time, the body would be shutting down blood flow to that area, but because there was so much blood loss, the body actually caused the heart to bump, to beat harder, mm-hmm. and to push harder to keep fluid, to keep blood flowing to the heart, or to the heart, lungs, and the brain. And at the same time, instead of shutting down other systems in the body, it actually caused water to flow from the tissues into the bloodstream to increase the blood flow. Mm-hmm. To increase the blood volume. That, ladies and gentlemen, is part of the fight or flight response. What was happening there with that heart attack was that with that exploded artery was part of the fight or flight response. And some of the systems of the body, when you're under stress, actually shut down completely and stop functioning entirely. Others are affected to do certain things for certain purposes. One of them being the cardiovascular system. In acute stress, for example, if you have to run to get away from the stressor, you know, there are times in life when we have to run away from stressors, right?
Usually.
But that's more figurative nowadays than it is. It is. It's a much more figurative.
You can't really run away from the person cutting in front of you on the freeway.
On the freeway. And, you know, you can't run away
from the power bill. You can't run from the phone bill, medical bill.
You know, it's kind of figurative to run away. And
family reunion.
Way back when we were in a more primitive state, less industrial, less advanced state, our stressors were actually trying to kill us. And so we needed to be able to run away from them, or we needed to be able to turn and fight. So let's talk about what happens there. Instantly, let's use the example that I use in my seminars, and I think I've used this before, but imagine that you are in a field far, far away where there are tigers. Now, tigers are big animals. A tiger with the strength of its jaw can literally crush your skull like it's a cantaloupe.
Nice.
Yeah. Wait. Human beings grew up with tigers.
Mm-hmm.
They evolved with tigers, and they know and have known at a visceral level how dangerous they really are. So you're walking in these tall grass, and you can't see anything around you but the tall grass. But suddenly you can smell the tiger. Your body instantly knows that there is a tiger. There is an acute stressor, and it's close. And you know, if you can smell that tiger, it means that tiger
it's got to be pretty darn close.
Yeah, it's ready to pounce on you, right? You can jump over that grass and you're dead. You are the cantaloupe. Splat. I don't know if that's the noise it makes, but you know,
more like
you're
a squill crunch, crunch.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. What happens then is amazing, because instantly, with no time to think about it, no time to perceive anything that you have just, other than what you have just perceived, the smell of the tiger. You don't see the tiger. You don't hear the tiger. You smell the tiger. Okay? Even before other animals. Let's say that you have perceived the tiger is there and ready to pounce before anybody else. Take a little drink of water, because this is, you know, got me all stressed out just thinking about that tiger.
Allergy season, goldenrod season.
Yeah, that's one of my stressors.
Yep.
I'm running from the goldenrod. Instantly, before you have a chance to think about it, your heart rate increases. Your blood pressure increases. And glucose release into your bloodstream increases dramatically. This is all to make it so that you can do a better job getting away from the tiger. So you can run farther, faster, jump higher, climb a tree. You know, to get away from your pursuer, you need that bit of extra. But, you know, that's not the only thing that happens. Your capillaries out in the extremities, except in your legs, in the upper part of your legs, but out in your arms, literally in your feet, your head, your neck, the capillaries in your skin of your trunk all squeeze tighter, so that less blood flow can actually get out there, because you don't need it. You absolutely don't need your arms to run. You're balancing with your arms, and that's about it. You're not lifting anything, right? That blood flow needs to go to large muscles of your legs, and it needs to continually fund the lungs, the heart, and the brain. Interestingly, at the same time, at that same moment, your brain function changes. So what happens in that moment? When your heart rate is up, your blood pressure is up, your glucose level is highly increased, what's happening to your ability to perceive things around you?
And your perception expands. It completely shifts from task-oriented, minute, hardline, you know, data. You're working on the computer, or you're driving a car heading a direction. Suddenly, your perception changes. Even if you can't see the car oncoming, but you know it's there, you're suddenly 10 times more aware of the road that you're on, of the traffic around you, how fast your car can move, and you're moving without even thinking. Cranking the wheel instead of slamming the brakes as the car's coming in to hit you.
So task-oriented function, brain function, kind of shuts down, and the broader, bigger picture is now available to you. Why? You know, what's the big deal there? Why?
Well, when you can perceive the threat and you can't actually see it, analytically, your body still has to go into survival mode. You still have to be able to escape it. And in the old wild world, when you could smell the beastie, you had to get out of there fast, whether you knew where the beast was or not.
Or you
had to turn around.
And fight. But if you are making to flee, you may not have an escape route immediately in mind. And so you have to be able to see all the possibilities around you in order to get away from the tiger, because they can turn on a dime. I mean, you watch those documentaries where the tiger is chasing the deer,
mm-hmm.
and the deer is zigzagging all over the place, and that tiger is just honing right down onto it. Your overall perception expands out to the detriment of your focus. And so people, most people, just about everybody, note that when they're under stress or when there's a lot of stressors in their life, they can't concentrate. So a lack of concentration is a big issue in trying to hold down a job, isn't it?
But when you're being surrounded by a pride of lions, your ability to perceive the environment around you on a much broader scale is of tremendous use.
You're less likely to be flanked, right?
Correct.
Because you're more aware of what's going on all around you.
The workplace?
Well, let's say
that's not really going to
help. Say that you are out in the grass digging yams. To all extents and purposes, in that instant, digging yams disappears from your thought processes.
Yep.
It's amazing. You can be engaged in a task, in something very task specific, very performance specific. You can be engaged in that, come under stress, and suddenly you find yourself unable to even remember what you were doing. You can forget what you're saying in mid-sentence if you're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the surprise, and then you try to go back and remember what you're talking
about. I can't remember what I'm talking about.
You know, what were we talking about?
Yeah.
And both people will look at each other and say, you'll pause, and you'll actually look at each other, and there'd be this
brain shifting.
Yeah. Accessing data, that is fight or flight response. It's kind of laughable. It's a little bit funny, and, you know, movies take advantage of this because it makes a ha-ha moment, you know. But in reality, that's fight or flight. That is a key indicator of fight or flight response. And the fight or flight hormone cascade is going on.
Very useful, very beneficial, very helpful until it becomes chronic.
Yeah, so people come into our office and they ask their minister to help them with their brain fog. They ask their minister to help them with their lack of attention, their memory loss, their loss of ambition or desire to really accomplish anything. What's really going on? You know, I look under the microscope and in our microvideography lab here, one of the first things that I'm looking for are other factors in indicating high levels of stress. And there are some, because it doesn't just stop with the blood rate. It doesn't just stop with the heart rate, the blood pressure, the glucose. It goes on.
Right.
It goes on into some far-reaching areas in the body that you wouldn't even think were going up because it doesn't have anything to do with getting away from the tiger, one would think. For example, I'll look under the microscope and I will see, of course, hormonal changes to the red blood cell due to change of hormones. Well, okay, that's a no-brainer because when there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of adrenal hormone as well, right? And you'll get a lot the same response as somebody suffering from thyroid, hypothyroid or hyperthyroidism. And that's a disease, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that the changes happen in the shape of the red blood cell because people who have studied that particular disease system. So we have this correlation also with the menses and with pregnancy and with the period. There are definite morphological changes that happen to that red blood cell during those periods, during those time periods, because of the changes of hormone. Well, the cortical hormones in fight or flight are much the same. They make those same, shape changes, morphological changes of the red blood cell. But there are other indicators, and there are indicators that could be easily mistaken for other diseases. For example, very often in the highly stressed individual who's complaining of brain fog, of lack of attention, sleeplessness, depression, they also will manifest under the microscope with certain of the key indicators for inflammation. One of them is bowel inflammation. One of the things that happens in the fight or flight hormone response is that the digestive system shuts down. Now, what do we mean by shuts down? The digestive system, the moment you open your eyes in the morning, begins to move. And it's a one-way street. It moves one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's good that it moves one way. We rely on that peristaltic movement going one way. We don't want to turn around and go the other direction, okay?
No, you die.
You don't die, but it can be very, very painful as things turn around and try and come back the other way. Yeah, that's bad. That's a bad thing. But when the movement stops, and it does in the fight or flight response, bowel function, digestive function, all those functions tend to stop for a period of time or slow significantly. Mm-hmm. So think about this. When that happens, there is a domino effect, a chain reaction of other occurrences. So follow me on that. What would be the next thing that happens if you're chronically stressed? And it's not an acute stress that goes away because you get away from the lion or you get eaten by the lion. One way or the other, it goes away, right? But if it doesn't and you're under chronic stress, like the stress that you were describing just a few minutes ago, what could be possibly happening in the bowel?
Well, first, the energy for peristalsis.
And I don't mean the bowel. The bowel, we associate the bowel with the end result. I'm talking about the whole digestive system here.
Yeah, yeah. The energy necessary for peristalsis has to be diverted to other areas. It's an unnecessary secondary system in survival mode. So that all that nutrients, all that energy going into those muscles get redirected into more critical muscles such as heart and other muscle tissue, nerve tissue,
brain, lung. Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
Exactly. Every time, and we're talking about chronic stress,
even oxygenation shuts down significantly to the digestive system during stress. Oxygenation stops. I mean, it doesn't stop, obviously. But the digestive system can actually get by, like the rest of our body, can actually really get by with a whole lot less oxygen than, say, our heart, our lungs, and our brain.
For a certain amount of time.
Right, for a certain amount of time. And that's why you can have somebody's heart stop and be stopped or hardly beating for quite a long time in surgery, and they'll come out and a few hours later begin to recover, and you'll see people roll out of recovery as if their lives were not hanging in the balance. And that's the reason, because much of our body doesn't require the oxygen that our brain, our hearts, and our lungs require. And so what happens is the bowel doesn't even need the kind of oxygenation that it needed before. But then what?
Then number three, systems associated with digestion, the production of enzyme-rich digestive bile salts and enzymes. Those things are secondary to the digestive tract. They're essential in the digestive tract, but they also require allocation of energy, allocation of nutrients, manufacture of proenzymes and blood flow. These things are not necessary in a system that has been shut down. If peristalsis is shut down, the enzymes can't even reach the locations they need to.
Right.
Without those proenzymes, enzymes, and those bile salts, digestion is literally, air quotes, shut down.
Okay, now here's what I want you to do to demonstrate what's going on in your bowel. Everybody listening, or if you tune in later, want you to pause your computer.
Do we have to?
This is pure science.
Yeah, it is.
This is radical self-reliant healing because you get an object lesson. You get a bird's eye view of what is actually going on in your bowel. It's so important for us to highlight this right now. I want you to go pause the listen to me first. When I'm done, when I say pause the computer and go do what I tell you to do. You're going to go to your fridge. Okay, what I need you to do is yesterday I needed you to pull out some hamburger or some piece of meat and thaw it. So you're going to go to your fridge and you're going to pull out that just maybe about the size of a thimble of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Ew. I know there's a lot of you are saying, oh, that's gross, meat. Who eats that anymore? But take out that piece of meat, and if you don't eat tofu
works too.
Yeah, take out a hunk of tofu about the size of a thimble and put it in a Ziploc bag. What I want you to do is seal that Ziploc bag, except I want you to leave just a teeny little corner open. Just a little bit. And that bag I want you to put up on top of your refrigerator and just check it once a day for about 3 days. Okay? Now, this happens a lot faster inside your bowel, but I want you to note what's going on inside that baggie, that Ziploc bag, with the passage of each day. Now, why would I tell you to leave that little corner open?
Oxygenation.
Oh no! Because what happens?
No, it's the wandering microbes.
No, it isn't even that, Jonathan. The wandering microbes are in there because you had the They were in the air.
Out in the air, yeah. And then you stuck it in the...
Yeah.
Okay, so that's happening. That's your gut flora, uh-huh. Right? If you seal that Ziploc bag, it will blow up with gas.
Yep.
And it will literally... And I don't want you to do this.
No.
Do not do this in your house if you want to remain happily married. Do not do this in your house. It'll blow up until that Ziploc fails. And it will explode. How do I know this? We did this little experiment by accident when I was a teenager. We went on vacation, but we had a freezer out in a little storage shed, a little garage shed, and it was plugged into the power and everything. But while we were gone, the breaker failed to the garage. And that whole freezer had a quarter of a beef in the freezer. When we got home, we were gone for 2 weeks, and it was summer in eastern Washington, you know, 100, 105 degrees inside a metal building. When we got home, that freezer lid was all the way up against the wall, and all those bags of meat had grown 8 or 9 times their normal size by the time they had exploded, so they had literally grown up out of the freezer and fallen down onto the floor, and then they began to explode, and they literally pelted the whole inside of the room with rotting meat. Now that's gross, so that's why I say a thimble. The size of a thimble for this test, and don't leave, and don't seal the bag all the way. But what you will see happen there is an exact duplicate of what will happen inside your gut of any food in there
without the associated digestive process.
Right, without the digestive process, yeah. It is just sitting there. It's sitting there literally rotting inside you, producing the same kind of gases. Now, we are a Ziploc bag with a little bit of opening on one end and at the open and at the other, and thankfully, or we would be that garage. We would literally explode. And some people feel like they're gonna. And some people look like they're gonna. But thankfully, you don't actually. Because the gases can escape. But everything else does not. Everything else does not. And so what happens then is you have on the whole inside of your intestinal tract, your stomach and intestinal tract, the very real possibility of chronic inflammation. Because of what is being produced, the poisonous materials being produced by food that is not properly digesting, not properly mixing with the substances that are necessary for breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
They are fermenting only. Now, there's a significant amount of fermentation that's necessary for any kind of digestion.
Yeah.
We ferment food for a living. This is
but
wrong.
But it's control. That's with the proper enzymes, proenzymes, with the proper bile salts, and the proper organisms doing their jobs. Everything's broken down precisely the way it's supposed to in a very carefully managed microbiome.
Literally, this is a complex system that is sustainable. It's a complex system because it's a system with many, many elements, many things going on. It's not just one thing providing all the energy for the action.
And movement from point A to point B
through
the system
is
absolutely essential for the system to work.
That's an element of the system. All the elements of the system work together. They interplay so closely. They're so closely associated that you can't say that one element is doing more work than the other. Now, what happens when you're under stress is that one element of the system is providing all the energy, and that is really just containment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intestinal tract itself without all the other elements involved, the movement and the substances and the organisms, the biome, necessary to do the right job. And so the end result of that can be a massive and acute inflammation, or it can be chronic inflammation of the gut. What's interesting to me, and the thing that I think that industry and the Nutricomafia and the Pharmacomafia and all the other mafias that run healing in this country, the whole medical institution, whether it's green or whether it's black or whether it's white, red, yellow, or chartreuse, purple, pink, or what have you.
Where were the infoseuticals?
Yeah, in there. Yeah, right in there. Right in there. The thing that they're all missing universally is how absolutely identical. The symptoms of chronic inflammation due to stress are to
colitis,
gluten intolerance.
And yeah.
Hey, look at the reason I said to use tofu or hamburger is because they're gluten free. The test will be 100% gluten free. And yet, you will duplicate exactly what's going on in a gluten-intolerant person. Mm-hmm. Truly gluten-intolerant person is a person whose system is unable to work in that harmonious fashion because of one thing or another, usually an allergy, or usually because of the way we produce gluten. It's just not the way we were evolved to use gluten. And so go figure, a lot of people are intolerant, but...
Well, and you have a peristalsic system... suppressed or reduced, slowed down by chronic stress, then even a modified gluten, which we would normally be able to handle
you
under
can't handle it.
Ordinary circumstances,
no.
There's no,
no
way we can handle it.
Ferment
we don't even
that
have,
that way?
We don't even have the ability to adapt to the new gluten because our digestive system is constantly bombarded by fight or flight.
That's right. The fact is that we're not adapting to anything anymore. We are demanding that technology make it right. But technology answer all of our questions for us. We're not adapting to anything anymore. And so it wouldn't surprise me within 10 years, 10, 15, maybe 20 years, to find that we are all gluten intolerant because of our chronic levels of stress. And it all has to do with something over which you have very little control. You can't think this away. You can't take 10 deep breaths. You can't, if you can get in a lotus position to begin with, getting there isn't going to help. I don't see anything about the lotus position that is going to make the house payment go away.
The only benefit that I have found with someone with experience with personally with chronic stress, the effect, long-term effects of chronic stress, pathological depression,
right,
through the years, the only thing of benefit that I have ever experienced out of the modern approach to coping with stress, this perceptual cognitive response to stress, is in the momentary shift in behavior, not in the actual physical effects of the stress, but in your social interactions. If you're a lot of us, we encounter a stressful situation and we develop aggression. And in a social situation, not really very
not
helpful,
so good.
Not
no,
good.
Not so good. Aggression.
So strategies to check our behavior and the presence of stress, these are very, very useful cognitive behavioral things. The trouble is it does not address causation or the physiological effects fight or flight response.
Yeah, here we're talking about the physical results. You know, we can talk about how we need to respond to stress or respond after stress or respond in the face of stress. That's a completely different issue.
And here's the ugly truth about stress. By the time you realize, by the time you sense the effects of chronic stress, all the chemistry inside the body has been active for several long seconds. We're not talking about an individual, myself, responding within, you know, a few moments past the speed of light response that happened with the stimulus. We're talking about several long seconds before suddenly I realize I'm tight, I'm uptight, I'm frustrated, or I'm apprehensive.
I've lost focus.
These are the old, by the time I realize that stress is afflicting my abilities, my mental capacity, it's been eons in the microbiological world.
Right.
From the time
Literally.
I experienced the stressor and the time I realized it.
Yeah, in if you take 3 seconds, for example, and you compare it to the speed of light, you are now, you know, there's no comparison.
It could have been, I mean...
You could be talking about, you know, millions of years of evolution.
And we're talking about biologic chemistry.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And so here's where I get hinky when it comes to the whole so-called, and I'm going to air quote again, the treatment that's available for stress. What are the treatments? Well, in the medical profession, there is no treatment.
in the medical profession, they have created a whole new branch mm-hmm. of allopathy called psychology. Well, not psychiatry, not psychology.
Loaded with psychopharmacognosy.
Psychopharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And so we have the psychopharmacomafia now.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me, if you could, you know, I'm having a hard time understanding or even dealing with the whole concept that Zoloft is going to make my power bill go away. Zoloft is going to take away my anxiety at work that I'm not adding up, that I'm not putting up, that I have, you know, if I have performance anxiety at work, job related stress, how does Zoloft take away that anxiety? It doesn't. It makes me not care. Okay, I'm not anxious about it, not because I'm doing any better.
Dude, it's classic allopathy.
Yeah.
Treat the symptom, and with the belief that if you treat and reduce all the symptoms associated with the disease, the disorder of the disease will go away.
So what you're telling me is that job-related stress is actually a Zoloft deficiency. Because Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, all these other types of psychotropic drugs fix it. Obviously, it fixes it, right?
No.
Well, obviously not, because even though we may not be feeling as anxious, even though we may, with those drugs, be able to perform better, and I'm not saying there's not a place for them. What I'm talking about now is not how to make you more productive in industry. That's what Zoloft does. That's mm-hmm. what Paxil does. That's what Prozac does. Makes you more productive in society, but does not remove the physical results of stress. Let's go down the list again. Heart rate increases, blood pressure increases, glucose levels increase. None of those drugs change any of that. They just make you not anxious about it. Okay? Digestive system, decreased function, leading to irritable bowel, chronic inflammation, nutrient deficiency and wastage because of the fermentation.
Yep.
And the diarrhea that causes. But even worse than that, bowel dehydration because of that inflammation leads to constipation after the diarrhea. And malabsorption and all kinds of stuff in the bowel, all due to the effects, the physical effects of stress and that hormone cascade, even though you may be taking a psychotropic drug that makes you not anxious about it. It's okay to have bowel inflammation because, after all, you don't have to worry about it. The medical profession has a pill for that too, right?
Well, these drugs are not designed to address the fight-or-flight response.
They're
only designed to mitigate one element in the fight-or-flight response, and that's serotonin.
Right.
The one single element.
That does not shut down the neurotransmitter that causes the heart rate, the blood pressure, the glucose, the digestive system. And that's not just that's not the only problem. We haven't even started yet. We're 51 minutes into this program, and we haven't even touched on what happens to skin and lungs, what happens in oxidative stress, your free radical activity mm-hmm. in the body. We know has a huge association with things like cancer and other diseases. Your immune system, your reproductive system. You know, wow, let's go to the skin and the lungs. When the bowel is no longer functioning properly to remove garbage, because at the same time as you are blowing up with all this
mm-hmm.
poorly digesting food, in the first place, you're not eating the right food anyway. Let's just admit it, okay? Let's just admit it. You're not eating the right food.
Especially if you buy it from a corporation.
Right. If you're asking the corporation for permission to buy and eat their food, that food is what's blowing up in you, and that's worse than that little thimble full of hamburger. I guarantee it. So that's blowing up in you. If your system, the usual system for removing toxins, is not functioning properly, the body does have secondary systems. they are first the lung.
Mm-hmm.
So
especially for gases.
It's gaseous waste.
Yeah.
Now, if there's an amount of gaseous waste that's being produced in the bowel because of chronic inflammation of the bowel, some of that is going to find its way back into the bloodstream just because of the way the system is put together, okay? It's put together for this purpose. It's to move gases and solids and all kinds of stuff.
And the body's first priority is to stay alive.
Stay alive. It can't necessarily do much to stay healthy, but staying alive, mm-hmm. it can do a great deal. You can kick and scream all your way out of this life, and it can take you a good deal of time to do it. Those wastes will tend to want to come out through the lung. And so almost universally, when we have people who come in who are struggling with irritable bowel, chronic fatigue, nutrient deficiencies, constipation, diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
but of the chronic nature, and we find through interview that their level of stress is quite high, we also find very often that they suffer with bouts of chronic bronchitis,
mm-hmm.
and an amazing amount of lung and upper respiratory system involved or associated allergy. All for which there are treatments, all for which they're swallowing this white pill, this mm-hmm. black pill, or this green pill, or swallowing something else. So we're just coming down through the digestive system, and all of a sudden we find out that, lo and behold, the lungs will kick in,
mm-hmm.
not well, not that effectively, because they're not made for
the lungs
thing.
Can only exchange certain gases. They're not designed for the myriad of gases that fermentation produces.
Yeah, well, the lungs are really designed to remove gases, but the trouble is that the body sends other than gases to the lungs.
Yeah.
It's in the bloodstream. The lungs try and kick in. The lungs are terrible at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing that happens is the skin is utilized to remove garbage from the body. We know this is true.
The epithelial tissue has a remarkable feature, in that it can, through the various organelles and the glands all throughout its substructure, produce and excrete huge amounts of oily substances, fats, oils, waters, liquids, whatever's necessary.
Salts
to keep the tissue safe and protected from the outside world. Much of the byproducts of fermentation are suspended in very similar fatty, oily, or saline water-based
right.
solutions. Our whole
exactly.
body is made up of this stuff. So if the gunk can't get out one way,
it'll get out another.
Because peristalsis has been paralyzed, has been stopped, and it can't get out through the gaseous exchange of the lung, it's going to be suspended in the only other available outlet,
right.
and that's in the oily excrements through the skin.
That's right. Skin is always associated with digestive upset. I mean, every single time. I mean, I know that, you know, dermatologists have a whole range of stuff they can throw at the skin.
Yeah.
But unless there is a foreign agent irritating the skin, causing an irritation dermatitis or an irritation rash from the outside, every other cause of skin ailments can be, at least following the medicine wheel, can be linked to the digestive tract. The bowel and the skin are brothers. So it's really interesting that we start to see this happening. The lung, the bowel, the skin, what a connected set of organ systems. It's all because they are excretory. They're all organs from which things that we need are absorbed from our environment.
Mm-hmm.
The lungs, obviously.
Yeah.
The bowel, obviously, and the skin, interestingly,
mm-hmm.
also absorbs things it comes into contact with. And naturally, then, they have the capacity, since they can take in, evidently, they have the capacity to try and push out.
Mm-hmm.
It's only fair. It's a seesaw. Life is a seesaw, right? It's a teeter-totter. Well, when the digestive system, let's just assume then that the skin and the lungs, the bowel, they're all connected in this chronic inflammation. Medical profession is now just absolutely obsessing on the the role of inflammation in the development of just about every disease system. They should be paying attention to their own doctrine.
They should, yeah.
Instead of going off fad wild on this inflammation. Because what they're doing is they're throwing anti-inflammatories into the puddle. Well, what good does it throw an anti-inflammatory into the puddle when the puddle is caused by lack of digestion? An anti-inflammatory is not going, it's like what? Your bowel is not functioning, you're not digesting, it's causing this fermentative process that creates the inflammation because of an anti-inflammatory deficiency? Not by any means. Now, if you have a serious, acute, and emergent inflammation, an anti-inflammatory
can be very useful.
It's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. If I have poison ivy all over my body, I will tell you right now, and if I get around some that's being burned and it's in my lungs,
mm-hmm.
as reactive to poison ivy as I am telling you right now, I'm not going to be spending much time looking around for jewelweed or plantain to rub between my hands and rub on my body.
No.
I'm going to run to the hospital and get myself some anti-inflammatory or die. So it can be a miracle. But the whole idea of treating, of looking at every disease system or the association of inflammation in every disease system and throwing anti-inflammatories at you is bass ackwards. It is ass backwards. Can we say that? Ass.
We can say that on the
radio. Holy cow, let's add that to the list. It is backwards, isn't it? To throw a drug at a symptom is not doing away with the cause. It's just not doing it. Now, symptoms are amazing. We use symptoms to ferret out what is the cause. But the whole idea that you can take away a symptom and the cause disappears along with it is not the truth. What the truth is that you get at the cause and help the body that has this intrinsic ability to heal and to fix itself and to reach equilibrium. The wisdom of the body can make things happen. If you affect that and you enhance that and you assist that, then the body is going to take away the cause of the disease. If you take away the cause of the disease, the symptom will follow. The symptom will follow along because it's the slave of the cause. It's not the other thing. It's not the other way around. The cause is not the slave of the symptom. The symptom is the slave of the cause. Okay, so let's go on. The immune system. Not only do we have all of this going on, but, you know, I go too fast. We bounced on that oxidative stress. One bad thing about improper digestion is that you are creating massive amounts of free radicals.
Mm-hmm.
Free radicals are chemistry, usually oxygen species, that have an extra. So they're buzzing around. And the one thing about the oxygen species, the chemists call them oxygen species, these are compounds that are primarily oxygen-based. Carbon dioxide, for example, is an oxygen species. But you have these free radical oxygen molecules, not molecules, compounds, running around that have a free oxygen. It allows them to bind to things that bind to oxygen. Well, most of the stuff in our body has to have oxygen, okay? So we have receptor sites everywhere for oxygen, and these free radical compounds do a hellacious amount of damage in the body. Even to the effect that the information packages in our cells can be disrupted. And that is a very, very bad thing. So here we have an oxidative stress issue when it comes to stressors, when it comes to fight or flight hormone syndrome. And that's what we're talking about here, a cascade of hormones. And starting in the brain at just under the speed of light, for heaven's sake, flowing down into the body in lightning speed, and it isn't until you get almost to the end result that it gets to the actual adrenals and the corticosteroids flow out. And the corticosteroids
And that's when you feel it. That's when
you
sense
feel that
stress.
Because you sense that in the first organ to be affected by those hormones is the diaphragm muscle. So that's why we feel it in the pit of our stomach.
Yeah, the classic signs, tension or the gasp.
Oh my God, oh my God.
Watery in the stomach and the diaphragm.
Yeah.
The knot, the muscle, the sudden tension.
Right up the neck and the shoulders.
A little trembling in the hands.
Perspiration over the brow and the lip. You start to feel these because of the corticosteroids. And this is about 30
of
them. End
of the chain.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's the end of the chain.
Truly.
Not the second, not the third, not the middle of the cascade.
It's close to the end. Close to the end. And they're all of them, every single one of them, do a certain thing. They're for a certain purpose, and these are all good purposes. They're to get you up that tree so you don't die. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is survival, right? Get you up the tree so you don't die, but there is a cost, and every one of the corticosteroid hormones are catabolic.
Mm-hmm.
That means that they destroy cells. There is a side effect. There is a downside, and it's cumulative, and that is what is called by the medical profession oxidative stress. The amount of oxidative stress that on the cells, now
mm-hmm.
we're talking way down in the cellular level here. We're not talking about anything, you know, we're not referencing anywhere near contemplating your navel or taking a deep breath or getting into the lotus position or whatever position you can get yourself into. This is way down
mm-hmm.
to the cellular level, to cellular metabolism, where you are not cognitively aware on any level. Oxidative stress does damage there, lots and lots and lots of it. So now let's go to the immune system. You see, whole systems are shut down. Why in the world would the digestive system be shut down in the first place? It's because it's not useful to you
when you're running or fighting the tiger.
Because all that oxygen, all that blood flow going to your bowel and your digestive tract, the whole digestive
mm-hmm.
tract must be that which is going to your leg muscles, to your lungs and your heart, your brain. It all has to be coordinated.
Look,
and what's amazing is the body has the ability to shut down parts of the body
yeah.
and direct blood flow to other parts of
and
the body.
And hey, that is a lot of oxygen.
Oh man.
That's a huge amount of oxygen.
Yeah, because your respiratory rate also increases dramatically
mm-hmm.
because of these hormones. Your body does have an amazing wisdom, an amazing control over. It's a huge system. It's just amazing. It's incredible. I can't get over myself. I can't get over it. I just I get stuck on contemplating how really complicated and complex this system is, and that the body has the ability to very closely monitor. If there's
mm-hmm.
a tiny bit less of oxygen going to the heart, the lungs, or the brain, it will automatically, without you having any time to think about it, restrict the blood flow to other parts of the body. That's crazy cool. That is really crazy cool. But there's a problem in that.
There's a cost.
There's a terrible cost. Terrible cost. And that's why so much of disease is caused by stress. Let's go to the immune system. Here's another system that is almost completely shut down. If not shut down, there are whole sections of it, whole functions of the immune system that are suppressed in their activity when a person is under stress. The first thing that is completely shut down or seems to be completely shut down or turned off during extreme stress, that would be your acute stress to really a lot of chronic stress
mm-hmm.
all piled up, is your pathogen surveillance. Pathogen surveillance involves those cells that have the ability to differentiate between self and non-self. When pathogen surveillance is not happening, your body doesn't know when it's sick. Your body doesn't know when it's been invaded. That can't be good.
Mm-mm.
And Zoloft and Paxil and Prozac does nothing to assist in body system surveillance, because each of those tend to shut down the immune system a little bit as well by a sedative effect. You have got to have pathogen surveillance. That is one of the most important defenses you have. Without it, probably sooner rather than later, you're going to die, because
Everything out there is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Right? Everything out there is trying to eat you. Because you're good food. You're put together dang well. You've got lots of fats. You've got lots of proteins. You've got lots of minerals. I mean, you know, one human being would feed a family of cheetahs for probably a week, 2 weeks. One human being. So we're dang good package of nutrient. Everything out there is trying to eat us from the largest to the smallest. So pathogen surveillance is amazingly important, and it is the first thing that is shut down. Those motile cells that are actually motoring around in your system to find, touch, and examine, and fine-tune what is self and what is not self, completely shut down. Now, if you happen to have an injury, this is very, very bad, because it's also those particular cells that have a huge effect on recovery time. So if your chronic stress is that in the athletic fields, your recovery time is greatly impaired by the stress of what you're asking your body to do. Greatly impaired.
And it's an interesting observation that I read about in a medical journal just recently. Our immune cells have a much shorter half-life than most of the other cells in our body. Therefore, when we have catabolic substances rushing through our system, it's actually our immune cells, which are proportionately a teeny tiny population by comparison. They get virtually, at least it's supposed, that they are virtually wiped out.
It can be.
By the fight or flight cascade, and have to be rebuilt from scratch after the incident is over, because they're such a short half-life, number one, and they're intrinsically fragile. Some of the leukocytes are designed to take substances, absorb them, assimilate them, fight them, and blow up.
And die. Yeah.
And distribute anti-inflammatory chemistry throughout their local vicinity by the very nature of their biochemistry.
Right. By their structure.
By their morphology. When they're stricken with a catabolic substance like these corticosteroids that are rushing through our system, they don't last very long in that environment.
No. And what's more, the cascade itself, the hormone cascade itself, shuts down. It literally suppresses
the manufacture
of these cells, because you don't need them to get away. You don't need that energy to be used there. You need energy to be used elsewhere. So the immune system is completely shut down. The production of these cells are shut down. The surveillance of pathogen is shut down. And that means that antibodies are useless. You can have tons and tons of them. But if there's no surveillance, there's no trigger for the antibodies to be released.
However, a secondary effect to the very same process is a heightened production of clotting factor.
Right.
So immune system, anti-inflammatory response from the immune system is suppressed, but clotting factor is huge.
Vastly increased. Your clotting factor, what happens is that all of your thrombocytes, which flow through your bloodstream, not activated.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the activation of the thrombocytes. The platelet activation is turned on. All of a sudden, all your platelets are active. So they're all clotting. They're all sticky. They're all stopping everywhere. Whereas before, they were not.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big indicator, and that's something that we can see instantly under the microscope. And that is something that slays me, that the profession out there ignores entirely this whole platelet activation. And yet the research is just crying out, look at this, look at this, look at this. This is a key indicator of inflammation.
Oh, yeah. And look, folks, we're not pulling this stuff out of thin air. We're pulling this information out of anatomy and physiology textbooks and continuous research through prestigious medical institutions and universities that are constantly running their researches, constantly publishing papers. This is not unknown science in the world of medical and alternative medical health. We know how the immune system and how these bodily systems function in response to stress. Why industry doesn't respond to this knowledge in an effective way is just baffling.
Well, what they're after, you know, you have all this amazing information about what actually happens to the platelets, is very accurate. The research is tremendous, I mean, they're spending all kinds of money that we simply don't have to prove what we want proved, that this is real, but their focus is on creating some substance that you can take to shut it all down.
What you really need is for your platelets to be less sticky. Your platelets need to be deactivated, so we need to create a drug to deactivate the platelets so that when you do get hit by a baseball bat or you get stabbed or something like that, you don't clot. And you know, what's up with that? You don't clot. Mm. You bleed out. You know, that's what the clotting factor, that's what the platelets are activated for anyway, is so that if you were to get injured, you wouldn't bleed out while you escaped.
Right.
While you defended yourself or escaped, you know, and then the bleeding could be stopped later.
Well, that's the major difference between acute stress, moments of acute fight or flight,
and
versus
chronic
syndrome, chronic stress syndrome.
The thing is that the chronic stress causes the same activation of the platelets.
Yep.
The same inflammatory key markers in the blood are there. So where the medical profession, where the pharmacomafia, where the medical temple is focusing on creating poisons to shut down our platelets and cause them to not be able to reactivate when appropriate, they're focusing on that, but at the same time, they're producing massive amounts of really, really good information that we should, because we do out here still have one or two, maybe three brain cells left to rub together.
Well, at least between the two of us.
Between the two of us, we can rub our brain cells together and we can make some connections. The body is an amazing system, and it is, you know, constantly battling to get to homeostasis. There is one thing that we can assume, no matter what we do, the body is going to be working on achieving balance, returning to homeostasis. This is something that the medical profession doesn't even deny. They still bow to the wisdom of the body.
Mm-hmm.
We can make connections to assist that homeostasis take place. There's another part of the immune system that is shut down, two parts of the immune system that is shut down. Well, one is shut down and the other is vastly affected. One is phagocytosis. Now, that's when certain of the leukocytes have the ability to actually engulf. And you were talking about that. They engulf a bad thing. They kill it with really nasty chemistry. And usually then, they don't, you know, most organisms eat, they digest, they poop. It's really not happens with our white, with most of our white blood cells. Two things happen. Either they disrupt, they explode, and they emit their innards out into the body fluid. And this is important, we'll talk about in a minute, but either that or some of them are able to be passed through the kidneys and literally shaken like laundry. And pathogens fall out in the kidneys and we piss it out. But here's the thing. During times of high stress, guess what system shuts down? The urinary tract. Because the body knows that it cannot allow the excess fluids to leave just now in case of injury. In case of injury where you have lost blood, your body needs that fluid to increase the blood pressure, whether there's as much red blood cells as there was before or plasma. Your body can pull that fluid in from the rest of the tissues and keep your heart, your lungs, and your brain alive. So it's not going to send the fluids. It's not sending the blood through the kidneys now.
It puts the kidneys through a rapid cycle.
A cycle down.
A rapid cycle down. In the process, your bladder is hit with constrictive hormones that causes it to contract.
It becomes smaller. That's right. It literally cannot receive the fluids, but also the capillaries of the kidneys restrict. They do the same thing as the bladder. They squeeze down tight and the blood simply doesn't flow.
And when this happens fast enough, you have the classic pee yourself out of fright response, because your body's evacuating. The bladder doesn't have the space for it.
It does not have the space. Oh, I peed a little. It's a real thing. We laugh, you know, but we get surprised or we get scared.
Yeah.
It's, you know, big boys do pee their pants. Talk to anybody in the military. Anybody in the military will tell you Okay. That happens. So phagocytosis is half of that. If the urinary tract, the kidneys, are shut down, then that function of removing the toxins does not happen. When that doesn't happen, those white blood cells simply rupture, they break apart, and their insides become, their entrails become their extrails. Their insides go outside of them.
And then they begin to ferment in the bloodstream.
Those proteins have to be broken down,
yeah.
But not now. Right now, all they can do is float around and ferment. Later on, they can be assimilated
mm-hmm.
as protein, hopefully, or just evacuated from the system. Again, I said antibody response is moot. It's a moot point because there's nothing to signal to the antibodies to go to work. There is no surveillance going on. So there is nothing to tell them to go out and to flow out from their storage locations into the system. Finally, when those cells do explode, they do actually lyse and they break apart. Much of what they have inside of them are inflammatory mediators. Some of them actually produce inflammatory substances called histones, and the effect can be very dramatic. Others have antihistamines. There's the histamine response and the antihistamine response, and these are what's happening to your white blood cell. Everything can be upside down in a chronic stress condition. Everything can be upside down in the immune system. We won't even probably get very much into the reproductive system, but I want to stress that in chronic stress, I want to emphasize in chronic stress, no part of the reproductive system is necessary for survival. Absolutely no part. So production of all the hormones that are necessary to reproduction are no longer useful. They're not created. They are withheld. Whereas certain of the reproductive hormones are useful in aggression and in response, especially in terms of the flight side of the fight or flight response, they still get produced to a certain degree because they do have a positive effect in your ability to survive. But for the most part, your reproductive hormones stop. They just simply stop. They don't flow out into the system. Your reproductive system is shut down. There is a reduction of the regulatory hormones that trigger the reproductive system to produce those specific hormones. So even the regulatory hormones out in the body aren't functioning properly because they are not necessary for survival at this time. So, you know, this can also dysregulate because you've already dysregulated all of your digestive hormones. Mm-hmm. Your inflammatory hormones are all screwed up. Your reproductive hormones are all screwed up. A chronic state of hormone screw up is just that. It is a big, big screw up. It's a failure of a system. It's a collapse of a normally very well put together, very well behaved complex system. What happens is everything is focused and has to be focused in one place. All the energy has to be provided from one direction and flow one direction. And in any complex system, this is a signal. It is a parameter for system collapse. The whole system doesn't necessarily have to come down. Whole branches, whole sections of the system collapse, and hopefully you will get away. Hopefully you will avoid death by the tiger, and then you can get things back on track. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that doesn't happen. The post-traumatic stress disorder,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is not a new thing, not a new thing at all. Sometimes it does not get back on track, mm-hmm. and that's what's going on here. Some of the things that stress causes to shut down, or to some of the diseases, or some of the systems, illness systems that stress causes in the hormonal system are infertility, depression of systems, depression of function,
mm-hmm.
lack of drive, failed performance, and all the emotionals that go along with these things. So, wow, we are dealing with corticosteroid hormones, and if you take a hypodermic needle and you pump yourself full of the same sorts of hormones, you're going to see the same effect in your reproductive system, in your immune system, in your digestive system, in your cardiovascular system.
Well, they've done this with mice and rats and monkeys
and people
for decades.
And people. I mean, we've watched the anabolic steroids absolutely destroy lives.
Yes.
Same sorts of things going on. So what do? Radical self-reliant healing depends upon getting our lives straight again, getting the truth in our heads, for one thing, gathering of right information about what's going on. Not information based in what product somebody wants to sell you. We should not. Radical self-reliant healing would not be turning our faces to the godlike corporations and bowing down, making our obeisance, paying our fines and our fees, paying our tithes to these huge corporations and begging their permission. They're begging their permission
to swallow Zoloft,
to use whatever they decide to make available to affect some change in our lives. This would not be radical self-reliant healing. This would be slavery. And this is what we have.
The standard American way.
That's, what is it about this rugged individualism that made America, that has created so many slaves in our time? I mean, how many of us simply decided long ago that technology was the answer, that nothing was going to happen that technology couldn't answer for us? Okay, technology, I will admit, except when it comes to understanding how my phone and how my TV remote works. Technology is marvelous, wonderful. I love the fact that your 8-cylinder engine can decide to run on fewer cylinders when you don't need it.
That's pretty nifty, actually.
Which is hardly ever when you're driving, because of the way you love to put that pedal all the way to the floorboard.
And you drove off a curb.
Well, I drove slow off the curb. I didn't. I probably used one cylinder to drive over that curb today.
Okay.
In fact, I did that twice today. Weird. A weird day for driving over curbs. But anyway, technology is not the devil. Technology is not the devil.
No.
But it's when we turn our faces to the godlike corporations and ask their permission. Because really, you look at what's available out there, and it is only that which these godlike corporations decide to make available to you. Not what is proven over time or through research to be effective, or how they're proven to be effective, but what the godlike corporations make available or decide to make available, what is feasible or marketable, what will make enough money to be deemed important enough to make available. And the corporation fearing supplicants of this religion of medicine will constantly and continually bow down to the corporations and swallow whatever communion they're handed.
And you can test this too. Anybody can go out and test this. They can go out and find a psychiatrist or a psychologist and ask them what the solutions to stress are. And any of them will tell you, at least those with whom I've spoken and received counsel on the subject, they'll tell me that either it's you have to take strategies to remain calm under stress, cognitive, behavioral, mindful concentration in the moment of stress to reduce the bad social effects of a highly aggravated, stressful environment, or two, there are some psychopharmaceuticals that can help ease and can reduce some of the problem, the symptoms a little bit. Well, then you jump across to the other side of the road and you have natural practitioners in the alternative health field. And I guarantee almost every single one of them you talk to that have gone to this school or that school or this school, well, I will tell you, meditation, or they are in with some company.
I got the
that has this product or this device.
Stress
guaranteed.
Order
to
before midnight tonight.
Stress.
So you don't forget, make your order before midnight because Stress X is exactly what you need for
this. Have not found more than maybe a handful of individuals in the hundreds of people that I have spoken to over the years who even remotely address food and right livelihood. For stress.
Food and right livelihood. That's the right lifestyle.
Or even acknowledge the physiological effects of stress.
Yeah, well, there you go. For one thing, we're not allowed to look at what is real. We have to put the rose-colored mm-hmm. glasses on. And then the strategies that are placed before us are only what they decide are appropriate. They go to a practitioner. The practitioner charges them for telling them they're under stress. And then charges them for selling a bottle that they will be enslaved to. And, you know, in most cases, I look at these pilled formulas,
mm-hmm.
and they may be have some association and some connection to some original study or some original research that was promising.
Yeah, an anecdotal report, you know,
or
really
even
promising stuff. Yeah.
Or even to that empirical research
mm-hmm.
that, you know, 1,000 years of constant use provides. Constant. But they're provided or they're made available in a form that is not anywhere near the original.
Right.
And in a form that cannot be properly used. And that's our choices out there. Radical self-reliant healing would mean the practitioner helps the individual, first of all, with something that is right now that will turn down that fight or flight hormone cascade.
That understands the mechanisms behind fight or flight, the physiology involved, not just the psychology of stress.
Right. We're not going to make the stressors go away until right lifestyle is achieved, but we can turn down the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
We can turn down the flow of chemistry. We can change the body's symptomatic response. We can change the chronicness of the stress. We can make it work more towards homeostasis. Then the practitioner has a responsibility, a sacred duty, to teach that individual what to do at home, what to change in the diet. And it's all diet. I mean, if you think that the pills you're taking don't have their origin in the diet, try to think again. Use your last two viable brain cells and rub them together a little harder, because that's where all drugs come from, is
mm-hmm.
food. That's where everything pharmaceutical and everything nutraceutical comes from, is food. And we look at indigenous peoples that are only manifesting the effects of stress now that modern industry, modern lifestyle, modern social culture are approaching them or impacting them.
Mm-hmm.
We look at those cultures and we examine what it was that, you know, which of these effects that are plaguing us, we examine them because they didn't exist among those peoples. We look at that. You know, we're going to find that the diet is filled with plants that literally do the thing that the practitioner is doing on the short term. So the practitioner has the ability, if they know how to research, they know how to learn, if that hasn't been taken away from them.
If they will look at the medicine physiopathically instead of allopathically.
If they will make the medicine, if they'll learn to make the medicine and quit asking corporations for permission to be a practitioner, then they will be able to help on the short term, but they will also have the knowledge of what their supplicants need to add to their diets, change in their diet,
mm-hmm.
and add to their diet to be able to take this over at home. Now, okay, I grant you, a lot of people look at this, a lot of corporate gurus and toadies will look at this and say, well, you're working your way out of a business. You're working your way out of a livelihood if you teach people how to be well.
Good.
I mean, what massage therapist would not rather see someone come in every single week for the rest of their lives? How much do they have to do to maintain that kind of a business? Okay, but that isn't healing, is it? That's amelioration. And that's, you know, holding up the hands that hang down, that's providing relief from mm-hmm. suffering. But the physiopath has the sacred duty to assist the body in its intrinsic ability to heal. And ideally, we want them to go home and do this thing. The competent and trained and ethical apothecary knows how to do this and sets the whole social stigma of the corporate value, the dollar value of every sufferer aside for the sake of relieving that suffering. We don't have that mentality very much anymore. It used to be in the old days, all medical doctors had this. They got in their buggy, rain or snow or mm-hmm. shine or sleet or wind or tornadoes or what have you, and they went to where the people were suffering, and they did what they could. That is a thing of the past. Your medical doctor used to make they were the physic. They mm-hmm. were called physics because they were the chemists. They made the medicines. The apothecary assisted them with the plants. But when it came to the chemistry of drugs, the physic was the guy who did it, and that became the physical doctor, mm-hmm. the MD. That is a thing of the past.
Yep.
They have completely sold their entire profession down the river into corporate slavery. And they have scuttled all of their patients and their clients right along with them. We cannot allow that in natural healing to become the cultural model.
It is already the cultural model. We can't allow it to continue.
We have to be the change agency. We, the regular people and the practitioners. At some point, practitioners have to get over this laziness of reductionism. They have to get over the idea that technology really can answer all the questions and go back to the knowledge that nature already has.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're simply not lazy about it, if we allow ourselves to gain right competence, engage in right livelihood, and do the right thing as apothecaries, competent, qualified apothecaries, then we will be turning this train around. We literally will pick this train up and turn it around and send it the other direction. And we have to do it because this is a system in collapse. This is absolutely in a system in collapse. This is Easter Island, okay? Natural medicine is in that position right now and never needed to be there, does not need to remain there.
In general, natural medicine or alternative healthcare across the board in the United States has presented the worst level of care and competence in the history of the movement of alternative health in this country.
Oh my gosh, yes. You know, when you have so many people defaulting to the thing that requires the least competence, every little device that comes out that doesn't require you to know anything because the device knows it for you, and it's all about convenience. I mean, I was looking at an advertisement of a BioMeridian, that can be done.
Oh, a remote scanner.
Remote scanner. You don't even have to be in the same state. Okay, now I do things out of state. I can set someone up with a screen share. They can be sitting at a microscope in California, and I'm here in Missouri, and it'll be like we're in the same office.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the work still has to go on. It's not that I have a machine telling me from California what to prescribe from Missouri and drop ship to California.
No.
That seems to be what is most prevalent out there, what is most titillating to people. And as a result, your schools that used to teach natural medicine are bowing to that, and their standard of education in the traditional sciences, in the nature of natural mm-hmm. medicine, has really fallen off dramatically. So So what we're attempting to do, what we're working hard to do here in Springfield, is that every week or so, every week or 2 weeks, we have free seminars, and we teach radical self-reliant healing. So there's one coming up on Saturday, yeah, right here in Springfield. And how do we find out about that? How do we get to that?
Just send us an email, or go to follow us on Facebook, or give us a call.
Give us a call. The number to call is
417-808-0538.
We'll tell you all about it. We have one coming up on Saturday. We're going to be talking radical self-reliant healing again, and that'll be in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
What do we say?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, yep. Right here at the Pathway to Healing building. And, everybody's invited. We also have weekly activities. We do some guided meditation right here in the office, and that's really not for so much for stress reduction as it is for, it's really cool. It's revelatory. We do that every single week on Tuesday. But you can also come in here in Springfield to have a full health, a whole body assessment. And that involves the inside of your body and the outside of your body and your muscles and your sinews and your bones, all your organs and what have you. We use the ancient system of the Nemenhom medicine wheel and the Sahaptin healing way to assess what is really going on, and then, really classic natural nature-based medicine. Our apothecaries make the medicine. We do not ask any corporations permission to be engaged in the religion of ministerial healing. And that's what's got to get back to. We have to work hard to restore the sacred in healing, because nobody else is out there doing it. Because as far as the industry is concerned, the dollar, the greenback, is God. And so in that sense, there's a whole lot of God-fearing people out there who are bowing to the corporations because they are the ones that get you to God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real. It is anti. It's anti-everything. And we need to fight this. We need to recreate our profession in a holy and a sacred model. And so that is what the University of Nemenha is about. And those of you who would be interested, and we hope that there's a lot of you, be interested in getting involved in the apothecary, in the Akek apothecary, and how to start doing in your location what we're doing here, please contact us at uninem.org. Go to www.uninem.org. Look at the college catalog. Decide to be part of this movement. This is how we will remake natural medicine. This is how we're going to get this thing under control, turn this train around, and make a huge difference in the world. Go to www.uninem.org. That's UNINEM. M as in Mary. Uninem.org. We have the catalog there, all the programs of the university. We can help you get started wherever you are. But if you happen to be in Springfield, and I hope that you have a chance to listen to this, come to our open house on Saturday, or our free seminar on Saturday, 6 o'clock, at the Pathways to Healing building here. We're at the south end of the Tower Plaza Shopping Center. You can't miss us, and we hope to see you there. Do you have anything else to add? Okay, this is Nemenha Radio, and we're going to sign off. Please get in touch with us. And remember that all of these every one of these episodes is recorded. So if you don't have a chance to sit and listen to us, you can get into the archives at Blog Talk Radio,
mm-hmm,
and go to them and download and listen on your computer. All right, that's it for tonight, and I want to say walk sacred and good night.